Thank you all for joining us in the session right after lunch. Really appreciate it. My name is John Dunn. I am Director of Library Technologies and Digital Libraries at Indiana University in Bloomington. And I'm joined here by my colleague Mark Notes, who is a Development Manager in the Digital Library Program at Indiana. And we're here to talk about a survey that we recently conducted of video streaming use and plans in academic libraries. Before we get into the meat of the survey and the results that we obtained from the survey, I wanted to give you a little bit of context as to why we undertook this. And it really centers around a new project that we've begun that is called Variations on Video. And to explain variations on video, I need to provide a little bit more context on something called variations. So variations is a digital music library system that was developed by Indiana University. Originally, the first iteration of the system went online about 15 years ago, back in 1996. In conjunction with opening a new music library facility at Indiana University Bloomington. And it was really one of the first libraries to provide online streaming access to its audio collections. Not all of the audio collections, but a portion of the audio collections that were digitized primarily for teaching and learning use, for instructional use. Items, sound recordings that were placed on reserve in the library for use by students and faculty in the School of Music. The current version of the system, it's gone through several technology iterations, as one would hope, since 1996. The current version was deployed in production at Indiana University in 2005. It's very heavily used there. We have about 20,000 digitized sound recording titles or digitized albums in there, and it's used sort of an integral part of the teaching and learning functions of our School of Music in terms of providing access to students for sound recordings for study, providing access in the classroom for instructors to present examples to discuss in class or to use in administering listening exams in class. Then last year, with support from a grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services, we released Variations as open source software. So it's now available for use to provide access to sound recording and musical score collections by any institution who would like to use it. And at this point, it's in use at about a dozen institutions outside of Indiana University, either in full production or in the context of a pilot test. So just a little bit about what the current version of Variations provides before I get into talking about Variations on Video, which is what it sounds like, is the idea of extending this to support video collection management and delivery as well. But basically, with the open source release of Variations, you get server software, you get clients for Windows and Mac. There is, at this point, a locally installed Java client that's used to provide access to some of the functionality, though other functionality is available strictly with a web browser. Some sample content for trying out the system, utilities to help with managing access control lists. That's a big feature of the system, is the ability to customize access control rules so that you can enforce local policies about copyright and fair use and licensing of materials. To be able to, for example, restrict a certain set of materials to access just by members of a particular course, other materials accessible to, you know, all of the affiliates of the institution, et cetera, and that's pretty heavily customizable, and we provide some utilities to help with that, as well as a variety of different client tools for working with audio and score content that I'll talk more about on the next slide. So it needs to run on a Linux or Unix server. We use a number of other open source products to support the system, including MySQL database, Apple's Darwin streaming server. Most of the system's written in Java. At this point, we are using QuickTime streaming, though we're looking at moving away from that. It's released under a BSD license, a fairly flexible open source license. It's designed primarily around a model in which entire sound recordings get digitized, so entire albums rather than just individual tracks. So though it's used a lot for reserves sorts of applications, it really is more of a full-fledged digital music library system. I mentioned the access control and a variety of different tools that may allow use of audio and musical score content in various teaching, learning, and research scenarios. And it's available at variations.sourceforge.net if you're interested. And there's documentation there, information about how to try it out yourself without having to install the server pieces and so forth. It is intended, though, for you. It doesn't come with content other than content for essentially testing it out to make sure it's working. The idea is you're digitizing your own content, putting it in there. We have worked with some vendors to make their subscription content available, to try to make their subscription content available through Variations, so you have a unified front end to locally digitized sound recording collections as well as licensed collections. At this point, the DRAM, which is formerly Database of Recorded American Music, is available through Variations front end, which among other things provides, as I mentioned, a variety of tools to support use of music content in teaching and learning. This is a timeliner tool that can be used to take a sound recording, a recording of a piece of music, and diagram out the structure of that recording and annotate that structure or annotate a sound recording in various ways, breaking it down into segments and subsegments and attaching annotations to that that can then appear as the recording plays back. There are a variety of other tools for creating playlists and some other features as well. But moving on to variations on video, this is a new project that we've begun to look at adding video access and delivery capabilities to variations in the same way that it supports audio collections now. And at this point, the project's in a planning phase. So we have a 6-month planning grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services, where Indiana University Libraries are working with the libraries at Northwestern University to look at what would the requirements be to extend variations to support video materials, how would we develop that, and try to actually build a collaboration to develop that with the goal of submitting a full proposal that would be a multi-institutional proposal to IMLS early next year. So really, what's motivating us to look at extending variations to video, really, there's several things. One is that one of the biggest questions we hear in talking with other institutions whose music libraries are interested in using variations for the music collections is, well, we're also looking for something that would help us manage all of our, you know, our digital media collections. We're beginning to digitize more materials. We're licensing video files with streaming rights from publishers in some cases. They are beginning to digitize archival collections, video collections, media collections that they need to provide access to, and looking for a single solution for all of that. In addition, locally at Indiana, we're, you know, at a lot of places, we're doing a lot more video digitization from library and archive collections. We have a new effort called the Media Preservation Initiative that I'll talk a little bit more about on the next slide. We have a new IT strategic plan in the university that has a lot of emphasis on media and video and preservation of and access to media collections. As you may know, Indiana University has a strong history of involvement in open source and community source software, so we don't want to develop a solution that's just going to benefit us. Really, what we want to do is try to create working with other institutions who have some of these same needs and interests, create a sustainable basis for ongoing development and then ongoing maintenance and support of a system that will meet needs for providing access to library and archive video. I mentioned the Media Preservation Initiative, and this is a little bit of an aside, but one of really the strong drivers for this at Indiana University, which is that we conducted a survey last year of physical media collections on our Bloomington campus, so audio and moving image collections, and found something like 60 different libraries and archives and academic departments, administrative departments that have media materials on something like 50 to 60 different formats, many of which are practically unplayable today, either due to media degradation or obsolescence of playback equipment. So a variety of old video formats, for example, that you simply can't buy, easily obtain equipment to play it back today. And so the university has really recognized that if we want any of this material to continue to be accessible, we need to make a major effort to reformat it to digital. And looking at now at what it would actually take to do that, to take all of the rare and unique materials that we have in various video and audio formats and digitize all of that. And it's something, the numbers are kind of scary, something like 250 to 300,000 individual pieces of media, even if we're only counting the rare and unique materials across the institution. And we need a place to put this, and we need a way to deliver it, and variations on video comes into play there for us. So we're really, just to contrast what we're trying to do with perhaps some other initiatives around video and audio, we're really looking at a system that is designed to provide access to what I would call managed collections. So these might typically be collections that are being digitized or acquired in born digital form by libraries and archives, audio and video collections. They might, though, exist in other sorts of offices and departments within the institution, primarily looking at materials, though, that are being used for research, teaching, and learning as opposed to more public relations, type of content. And these collections have a variety of different access control requirements depending on the use and the rights surrounding the content. And also, we are looking primarily at delivery and access to collections and audio and video materials, but we also want to integrate with services to support long-term preservation of materials. Some of the things we're not looking at in the context of this project include sort of the YouTube kind of ad hoc faculty student, video upload and access. We're not really looking at classroom capture necessarily, though this could potentially be the home for perhaps classroom capture output, but that's not the main focus. Live streaming, obviously, we're really looking at stored on demand. We're also not trying to build a full digital asset management system that's more designed for, production sorts of uses, storing a set of clips that can be drawn upon to produce, professionally produce new videos for public relations type efforts or to support the instructional activities within our telecom program or video production program. It's really for providing access to collections. And so this could include a variety of different types of content, though. As I mentioned, it could include things that we've licensed, recordings we've digitized, and are providing access to our local community for various purposes under a fair use argument. It could include archival collections of video held by university archives and other parts of the institution. Variety of different formats, different types of content, different uses, but focusing on this idea of sort of managed collections of content and how those get built and how access is provided. So just to wrap up talking about variations on video, just wanted to review kind of the goals of our current grant, which are, first of all, to identify the requirements for a system to provide access to the sort of video that I just described, and we're doing that in a number of ways, getting input from librarians and technologists. So, for example, all of you in this room, do some direct observation and interviewing of faculty and students who use media in teaching, learning, and research, and in particular media collections in teaching, learning, and research, and understanding their uses and needs, and then doing some technical investigation of some of the platforms that are out there that might feed into this work. So things like repository systems, where a heavy user of Fedora, looking at how can that fit into this. Other sorts of video systems, OpenCast Matterhorn or Kultura, that sort of operate maybe at slightly different levels than what we're talking about, but figuring out really what is the gap that we need to fill as opposed to support these sort of library and archive video collection management delivery needs as opposed to, building something up from scratch, which we really don't want to do. We don't want to duplicate effort here, but rather build something that serves a need that's not met at this point. from that, we're going to develop a high-level technical architecture and plan for development, and then form partnership with probably one or two or three other institutions to go forward for an IMLS grant in February to do the initial development of this and set up a basis for ongoing support. So with that bit of context, I will turn it over to Mark to talk in more depth about the actual survey and the results of that survey.
Thanks, John. So the survey we conducted back in the May timeframe, really before we knew if we would even get the planning grant, but in anticipation of getting that, and certainly in the context that John has described. So we put the survey together online, sent invitations out to several listservs or mailing lists that we had, and then we had approximately 150 respondents complete the survey. Most of the questions weren't required, so completion is sort of a murky concept here. And of these, about 90 reported currently streaming video. So in terms of who we sent the survey to and who responded, our focus really was library people. So you can see here the lion's share of respondents were librarians, system librarians, or library IT staff with a sprinkling of other folks thrown in. So let me talk first about the results from those who are currently streaming video at their institutions. We asked the question, what are the main kinds of video? Before I do this, let me just ask, how many people in this room may actually recall having responded to that survey? I'm curious. Did anybody in here see that and respond to it? Just a few. Okay. I was curious about that. So what are the main kinds of video content that you currently stream? And this was a check all that apply kind of question. And so born digital videos produced by their institution, digital video files from the vendor with streaming rights. Apologize that these got truncated when we transferred the files to this computer, but we will be publishing these results on our website so you can read the whole question. Purchased video media that were subsequently digitized, faculty-produced materials, digitized film media, vendor digital video files without streaming rights, and other. So you can see that the order there of interest in streaming or what people are already streaming, and you'll see that when we look at people who are not already streaming, that it's roughly the same items in the same order. We asked what streaming server you use, and the Flash media server was the main one, but not really run away there. Also, Windows Media, the Darwin streaming server, QuickTime, and the Real Media Helix server, as well as others such as Wowza, YouTube, iTunes, and so forth. So kind of scattering there. What method do you use to restrict access to your streaming video? We have a big concern with access control because we're talking very often about copyrighted materials, though not always. Anyone with network ID or VPN can view was the most frequently checked option there. Course management system, roster ID, no restriction, full public access, limited to specific class members via password. So that's where you give a password out to all your students, kind of some e-reserve systems work that way, for instance, and then they can view the materials, or they could be limited to certain computers. We asked which organization has primary responsibility for managing the streaming server, and here, library, given that we had library people responding, not too surprising that that was the largest percentage there, but also fairly substantial number of these were campus IT departments, or sometimes the institution might be the member of a consortium that handles the streaming server. And in a few cases it was outsourcing, and in a lot of cases they had multiple servers run by multiple organizations. So, and then we asked these people what they liked about their current video streaming solution. Reliability, these are kind of in declining order of frequency of response, so reliability, broader and easier access, the kinds of tools that they had available to work with a video were some of the ones that came out on top of what people did like. And of course, we also asked what needs are not currently well met by the solution that you have. Rights management and ability to control authentication or restrict access were at the top, those two. Some other features such as lacking the ability to create clips, embed in Blackboard, port clips, collaborate, do bookmarking, workflow issues, and you can see the rest of the list there. So next I'd like to show the responses to the questions we asked to people that were not currently streaming video at their institution. And so we asked them about their plans, and you can see here that most are investigating. Most of these said they were investigating video streaming options but have not made a decision yet. Only 14% of those said that they had no plans to stream video. And then 10% had plans to implement a specific solution. Now we asked if you'd already, the relatively small number that had already decided which one they were going to use, which one are you likely to use, and most of those had chosen, had chosen one of the ones mentioned earlier, Flash, Windows Media, QuickTime Darwin, or Helix, but then a fairly large section, 46%, had chosen another one, such as Wowza, or listing some of the ones that we had listed, so I'm not sure what those responses meant. We asked what main types of video content would you like to stream? Again, the same question that we asked to the people that were currently streaming. And again, Born Digital Videos produced by our institution comes out on top, or digital video files purchased with streaming rights, purchased video media subsequently digitized, so that might be in other formats, analog formats, faculty-produced material, and so forth. And finally, we have some questions that we asked both groups of respondents. We had a fairly extensive question where we listed out a bunch of features and said, which of these features do you see as must-haves for any solution that you would adopt as opposed to would like to have or you're not sure or you don't need? The ones that came out on the top of the list for people saying we really need to have this at the top was the ability of users to adjust playback location precisely, even within a second of the desired location, and to do that well. Very important when the video is not maybe just a talking head, but the object of study in a course, in a film or music or dance or course like that. Users can mark a particular location in a video for future immediate access, so imagine instructors bookmarking so that they can go exactly to the location that they want to move to in the class presentation. Users can create a playlist of segments from different videos for future reference, having transcripts accompany videos, and then video content delivered to mobile devices. So those were the top must-have requirements from people in the survey. Then we asked what interactive end-user features do you want to have in a video streaming solution. These were open responses, and so we kind of grouped the responses by different topical categories here. The ability of clips to be downloaded for use in other applications, closed or self-captioning, search by being able to search according to the content of transcripts, tools for creating learning objects for integration into online classes, repurposing the content, remote access, or usage statistics were some of the things that people were looking for. We also asked about repositories or digital asset management systems to find out which ones people were currently running. And so ContentDM, DSpace, and Fedora showed up, as well as other, and those, some of those are listed there. And then we asked, if you're running a repository, which ones do you use to store video assets? And then other was the main one there, followed by DSpace, ContentDM, and Fedora. And then finally, at the end of the survey, we asked for people's additional comments. And we kind of grouped these responses in terms of issues and opportunities. main issues people saw were copyright barriers, cost of licensing, policy issues, conflicts between the needs of library and IT and storage costs. Excuse me. And some of the main opportunities there were faculty and students. People were happy that faculty and students loved the solution they had or opportunity for increased collaboration. So last week, as part of the IMLS-funded planning grant, we invited people from different institutions to come to Bloomington, Indiana University, and talk with us about requirements. They contributed usage scenarios to surface user requirements, and we analyzed those scenarios and developed functional and technical requirements. This is the logos of the participating institutions. We are happy came and joined us. And out of that meeting, we'll be posting more on our website, but I would say the preliminary directions from last week's meeting are that we're more likely to focus on the ingest, management, and delivery of video than on sophisticated analysis and annotation tools, at least initially. We do want to get to the pedagogical tools, but we feel the base services need to be in place. And we're tending towards a modular development approach, and we're investigating opportunities to leverage work of other projects where possible, such as the OpenCast Matterhorn project, which, although it's focused mostly on lecture capture, has aspirations beyond that, and that might make sense for us to work with parts of their technology or with their community, as well as the Kultura product, which has an open source version. The initial list of modules that we're considering proposing in our next grant proposal would be implementing ingest and transcoding. I say implement, hopefully this is something that we can get from elsewhere, and we don't expect to be writing our own transcoding algorithms. And media delivery server, again, would be highly leveraged. We expect to put a lot of our effort into the basic player interface, the video player interface, because most of the players that are out there just aren't that suitable to instructional use of video in a lot of cases. Simple metadata storage and management search, the ability to search across the collection when you're managing the collection, access control with authentication and the ability to import metadata from other systems. That's a very rough tentative list of what we think we'll be looking at. The basic player that I mentioned we'd probably end up putting a lot of energy into would include navigational metadata. You think of audio recording. With our audio recording, John mentioned that we have digitized entire albums. You don't want to be moving the slider back and forth within that album to try to find the right place. If you've got tracks, you can just click on the track and go to where you want. And so with video, again, you don't want to, if you're an instructor presenting something in a class, you want to waste time trying to find the right point. So we need the ability to have chapter or track markers within the larger video file to allow for that navigation. And then precise responsive time positioning of playback. The player needs to be embeddable in a course management system, for instance, or in a web page. We would like for delivery to be, of course, browser-based, but also we have to recognize the huge explosion of mobile delivery platforms. It's just a reality we're going to have to deal with. Bookmarking and then clip and playlist creation hopefully would be in our initial version, but that is something that could be, say, in a phase two of development. And it's just a made-up picture of what something might look like. You can see over on the right-hand side here a listing of tracks. This is a video of a performance at Indiana University of the Romeo and Juliet Gounod opera. And so, you know, this is a pretty long 150-minute recording. Not that easy necessarily to navigate between. Probably can't see too well, but there's a list of tick marks at the bottom here that would indicate the acts and scenes although they're called tracks here. And then the little green things at the bottom there would be bookmarks. And then you have the ability to change the extent of this navigational slider at the bottom instead of representing the total of the recording to just go down to one scene. And it gives you a finer level of granularity of control if that entire span is just representing, say, 3 minutes instead of 2 or 3 hours. Or, of course, you can click on a scene over here to navigate to that. So you can imagine an opera student who might be singing in the chorus in an opera, being able to bookmark the parts of the opera that he is performing in, and then easily be able to just jump to those locations and watch those in different recordings as an approach. So that's the kind of thing that we have in mind. So if you are interested in this, we're particularly at this point as we put together a grant interested in prioritizing requirements, and we're interested in identifying institutions that would like to be part of this community, that would like to collaborate, perhaps share development activities, or otherwise work with us in accomplishing this and making the results of that survey that we did last spring kind of come to life and be useful on our campuses. So there's the URL there. You can visit our project page, and we'll be posting more and more there in terms of write-ups of last week's meeting, the slides from this presentation, a report on the survey, more of a formal report. And then you can also, from that same page, follow us on Facebook or Twitter. You see the links there of our video. And then I'd also like to announce, I think that the BOFs for this afternoon are officially posted at 3 o'clock, so I'm only slightly premature here in inviting you. We signed up for room 207A if you'd like to talk further about the survey or about the project or just generally about using streaming audio and video from library-managed collections on your campuses. Come join us in 207A at 4:30 this afternoon. Check the BOF listing board to make sure, I guess, but that's where we're planning to be. So that is it, and I think we have time for questions. John, would you like to have some time?
Yeah, we actually looks like we have quite a lot of time for questions if anyone has them. So please do come up to the mic and ask your question to the mic so those who are viewing remotely can hear.
Wesley Wright, University of Vermont. What are your feelings with respect to progressive download rather than streaming? Do we still really need streaming?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the world, you know, we use the word streaming a lot in the context of the survey, but, you know, I think more and more people are just talking more generically about video delivery as opposed to just streaming as more content is being, as you know, being made available via progressive download or other HTTP-based techniques. I mean, for example, the Apple's HTTP live streaming that's used on the iOS devices, which it's not really progressive download, but it's not streaming in the traditional sense either. We had actually a lot of interesting conversation about this at the meeting that Mark mentioned last week. Often, libraries have looked to streaming as a way of, you know, not completely, obviously, but you know, providing, preventing the ability to download or capture materials, but making it a little bit harder, right? And it's often even written into license agreements, for example, but from video providers. They say you must stream and not make available for download. So,
which is one of the number one things your survey said users wanted too. So sort of
is to be able to download clips.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's something that I think we need to talk more with the content owners and content providers about, sort of to what level of, you know, do we need to provide more streaming type delivery as opposed to progressive download in order to accommodate those concerns, while explaining to them that there are stream capture tools out there that can capture things even if they are being streamed, so it's not really security. I think it's an evolve. I don't have a great answer, a single answer to your question.
Conversely, progressive download doesn't do you very much when you want to have the accurate, you know, jump ahead to this point in the video
when it's near the end. Yeah, if you have a very long video, progressive download is not so great. So I think what we'll really have is a variety of different delivery methods. I mean, even obviously to different devices, you know, these days you can't have one encoding or one set of encodings and one, you know, streaming method. You may want to do flash streaming to Windows and Mac clients, but obviously that doesn't work for, you know, an iPhone, and so you have to provide HTTP live streaming for that. And so, you know, streaming servers.
Or HTML5.
Or HTML5, but then you have the whole.
Depending on your browser.
Yeah, the whole H.264
versus
VPA.
Why can't this be, you know, this streaming technology and video has been on the web for like 10 or 12 years now.
Yeah.
How come they haven't figured it out yet?
Business interests, I think, to a large degree. But really, I think, you know, people are recognizing more and more that you have to encode to multiple formats, you have to deliver using multiple methods, and you have to have a system that makes it easy to move to new delivery methods and encodings, you know, as the world changes, and having a system that locks you into one particular delivery methodology, for example, the QuickTime streaming, Darwin streaming server that we use now, variations isn't the way to go.
Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the, you know, I can't remember if I got the survey or not, but if I did, one of the things I would have listed as top concerns is rights management. Because we've got QuickTime Streaming Server, we have Real Server. I've looked at Red 5, which is sort of like Wowza, which is sort of like Adobe Flash Server. And none of them have a good security model.
They don't, and I think the most commonly used method for securing access to stream video content is to do something like create a randomly named a symbolic link or alias on the fly and hand that out to the client and then time that out after a certain period of time.
There is a shibboleth version of Darwin Streaming Server floating out there.
Yeah, I know NYU did some work on that. But yeah, I agree. That's one of the biggest challenges, and also one of the biggest challenges in integrating with multiple streaming server technologies. So one of the, you know, issues we've talked about is that various institutions may have certain technologies or, you know, streaming server, delivery servers within their library, within the institution at an enterprise level. And if we want to build these sort of library collection management capabilities on top of that that provide for access control but yet can integrate with whatever streaming server an institution's using, it's very hard to sort of push that all the way down, you know, from the kind of management layer into the actual streaming delivery. So it's an architectural challenge.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Gary Friesen, Taylor University, Indiana. Hmm. We just implemented a flash server this summer, and we're starting to digitize videos where students have accessed them from within Blackboard. And the question has come up about using putting an entire video, for example, Hamlet. And, you know, what's your take on, you know, using the full video posting for, you know, a purpose like for class usage like that?
You mean from a copyright and legal standpoint?
Yeah, the copyright and legal, and that's come up on our campus. And what's your take on that?
Mark. Yeah, it's a hard question to answer. I mean, and of course, you have two levels of involved typically. There's what can you do from a copyright standpoint, where you have certain exceptions to the rights that you could potentially take advantage of if you can build a strong argument, fair use being one of the most commonly invoked exceptions. But then, you know, if it's on some sort of encrypted media like a DVD, then you also have the anti-circumvention restrictions of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which provide much fewer sort of holes to navigate through in terms of making that kind of content available. So it really has a lot to do, I think, with local what we've seen certainly in the audio world is there's a lot of variation with regard to local institutional practice and comfort with fair use and other exceptions, as well as sort of local comfort in terms of risk assessment, which is really what this often comes down to. So I guess I can't give you a single answer there.
Can I ask you what Indiana University is planning to do? I mean, would you post Hamlet in entirety for a literature course?
Right now, if it is on a DVD, and we would have to take it off of the DVD and make it accessible to that course, no. Because of the DMCA issues. Audio does not have the same issues.
But if it's on a VHS?
That gets a little debatable, you know, as far as whether Macrovision is, you know, considered an anti-circumvention measure. So we're still, I guess, feeling out what our policies and practices are.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks.
Any other questions or comments?
Great. Well, thank you very much for coming to this session. And as Mark mentioned, if you're interested, please come up and please get in touch with us online. Come up and talk with us afterwards, or come to the BOF on online library audiovisual collection delivery at 4:30, we think, in 207A. So thanks again.